Rosie Damani was starting to feel uneasy. She had texted Tony over a week ago to tell him about the strange phone call she'd received from the guy pretending to be his workmate, describing, with humorous exaggeration, the blocked number, the slightly staticky connection, and the flat American accent of the voice on the other end of the line. "Just what are you investigating down there anyway?" she'd asked, followed by the frowning monocled emoji and two staring eyes. Then, not wanting to seem as though she'd taken anything too seriously, she'd added, "Love me a conspiracy. Already a hashtag believer, as you can see, LOL." The truth was that the call had deeply unsettled her, but she was worried that to tell him so would only spook him. She liked Tony much more than anyone she'd tried to date in recent years, and the last thing she wanted was to blow her chance with him by coming off as paranoid or needy. But she'd heard nothing back. He didn't have his read receipts enabled, so she had no idea whether he'd seen her messages or not. And when she'd tried to call him a few days later, "I've honestly gone full dark web on this," she imagined saying with a laugh. "Tony, mate, you've got to talk me down." She hadn't been able to get through. Of course, he had told her that he was going to be out of range for a few days, but she felt foolish that she hadn't pressed him at the time to explain exactly what he'd meant by out of range. Was he going somewhere with no mobile coverage? Or was he in the kind of company that might require him to surrender his phone? She knew that his article was about the super rich. Maybe he had an invitation to some sort of select gathering, some retreat, some inner circle with people who might have privacy concerns. Or maybe he used a different phone when he was working. Or maybe, Rosie thought, disgusted now, he had just wanted a bit of time to himself, and out of range was just a tactful euphemism. And she was paranoid, and she was needy, and she was coming on too strong. She scrolled back up through the string of messages she'd sent him, 8 since the last text he'd sent to her, and sighed. He was probably just ghosting her. She'd probably already blown it, she thought, and despondently put her phone away. She went to the gym to run it off, telling herself that although, yes, Tony's sister Veronica did go to the same gym that she did, and they did sometimes see each other there on weeknights, it was hardly likely tonight would be one of those nights, since, as Rosie knew, Veronica was a registrar at the Christchurch Women's Hospital, and so her hours varied from week to week. And she had a boyfriend of her own, actually a fiancé, who was a doctor as well, so his hours were long and unpredictable as well, which made it even less likely that she would be there. Especially as he was building up to a marathon and preferred to do his training out of doors. Often, Rosie had seen them once or twice, with Veronica cycling beside him. "Rosie?" It was Veronica. "Oh, hey," she said, switching off the treadmill and hopping down. "How are you?" Veronica had a sly look. "So, you and Tony, eh?" she said. "Yeah," Rosie said. "Well, I mean, maybe, you know." "I am so mad at him right now," Veronica said.
"Why?"
Rosie said. "So, you know he's down in Thorndike."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah, well, he asked to borrow my car to get down there and—" "Sorry," she said, pulling herself up. "You're like, and I'm being all like, rah."
"It's fine," Rosie said.
"I mean, I'm not actually mad at him."
"Tell me the story."
"It's not even a story. He's just a shithead."
"Oi,"
said Rosie, feigning a right hook to Veronica's shoulder.
"Finish what you start already."
"Okay," Veronica said. "So yeah, he asked to borrow my car because he said he was interviewing this confidential source for this article he was writing. And I was like, of course, thinking I was doing him such a good turn or whatever. But then yesterday I ran into Katie Vander. Do you know her? From Burnham Wood?"
"I guess," Rosie said.
"I mean, I don't know her, but yeah."
"Yeah, same," Veronica said. "Anyway, I asked her about Tony because he told me that he'd been chucked out of their last meeting, and I wanted to know why. And she said, first of all, that never happened, and second, they're down in Thorndike. Burnham Wood is down in Thorndike, right now."
"What?" Rosie said.
"I know," Veronica said. "He totally lied to me, just to get my car. And he knows I'm pissed at him as well, because he stopped answering my—"
"Wait," Rosie said.
"What?"
Veronica took a half step back.
"Oh," she said. "Now I feel like I'm stirring. He didn't tell me any of this," Rosie said.
"Oh, shit," Veronica said.
Okay, sorry, I don't want to. He told me he was writing an article about billionaires. Maybe he is, Veronica said, now looking unsure. I mean, yeah, Katie said the whole reason they went down there in the first place is because Mira Bunting met this billionaire. You know, the Autonomo guy? The one whose wife... Mira Bunting? Rosie said. There was a pause. I'm totally messing this up, Veronica said. Look, just forget I said anything, all right? Sorry. No, wait, Rosie said. What was this about the meeting? I'm really not trying to start anything, Veronica said. Honestly, it's not even a big... What happened? This is like totally second-hand information anyway. I know that, Rosie said, cutting over her. What happened? Katie just said there was a disagreement, Veronica said. Between who? Tony and... I guess... everyone else, Veronica said. What was it about? But Veronica was backing away. You should really ask Tony, she said. Sorry, I shouldn't have said anything. And he's really not a shithead, he's just my brother. And I'm actually really happy you guys hooked up, I really am. Sorry, Rosie. Sorry. Red-faced, she scuttled down to the other end of the gym, where she put her earbuds in and climbed onto the elliptical and began straining at the handles and the pedals with greater vigor than the machine's settings would permit. And although Rosie had only been on the treadmill 15 minutes, she gathered up her towel and her water bottle and headed to the locker rooms to change. She knew that any self-respecting person in her situation would just delete Tony's number and move on. The whole dreary picture was in focus now. The fact that on the night they'd got together, he had come to the Fox and Ferret straight from Burnham Wood. The fact that when they'd gone out for dinner a few nights later, he had seemed strangely defensive about the article that he was writing, deflecting her questions, not looking her in the eye when he spoke about it, and changing the subject as soon as the opportunity arose. The fact that he'd left for Thorndyke with such urgency, and yet hadn't seemed to have an answer when she'd asked him how long he planned to be away. The fact that he'd now stopped answering her messages. It all felt unbearably tawdry suddenly. A story that had been read and seen and heard and written too many times to count. And as Rosie let herself back into her flat, poached a chicken breast, dressed a salad, and poured a glass of wine, she told herself resolutely that she was not going to play the role that he had cast her in. She was not going to spend the evening in her sweatpants, getting drunk and stalking him pathetically online. But hell, nobody was watching. She opened her laptop and searched for Mira Bunting. But despite combing through the contacts of all their mutual friends and plausible acquaintances, all she could find was a few old photos on the Burnham Wood Facebook page, none of which were tagged. Either Mira considered herself to be above social media, which would certainly square with Rosie's impression of her, having known her very distantly at school. Or, more likely, Rosie thought, now with a haughtiness of her own, Mira pretended that she was above social media, but trawled the sites every day in secret, using an avatar, never posting anything, and never risking anything either. Rosie poured herself another glass of wine and searched for Burnham Wood plus Thorndyke. And then, opening a bar of chocolate, for Burnham Wood plus Thorndyke plus billionaire. A news article popped up. The result had matched Thorndyke and billionaire, but not Burnham Wood. But she clicked on it anyway, and read that on Friday night a local businessman and conservationist had been killed in a car accident near his home in Thorndyke. Sir Owen Darvish, who had been knighted less than a month before his death, had been recognised for his conservation work in partnership with American tech giant Autonomo. Rosie had been about to click away. She sat forward. Establishing a project to monitor endangered native birds by drone. In a letter of condolence, Robert Lemoyne, Autonomo's co-founder and former CEO, vowed to carry on Sir Owen's legacy. She scrolled down. A link at the bottom of the page directed her to a related article. A video clip from 2015 that showed Lemoyne introducing a new model of Autonomo drone. Rosie clicked on it and maximized the window. At first she thought she was looking at a screensaver. Dissolving tracking shots from overhead of jungles, urban centres, white sand beaches and snowy mountain slopes gave way to a revolving close-up of the drone itself, presented on a plinth and shot from below to give a sense of majesty. The camera housing gleaming, the skids and the propellers sparkling in the turning light. Then the camera pulled back and a man in his 40s appeared out of the dark. He pressed a key on a control pad and the machine hummed to life, lifting off the plinth and out of sight. The picture changed again to the drone's perspective, now circling the man, now climbing higher and higher and veering off through a window and out over roofs and steeples and suburban lawns and swimming pools, now climbing up a mountainside, now passing over a savannah, the grasses and acacias shimmering with heat, now banking out to sea and passing over the flukes of a whale. As the drone flew, a voiceover described its features, the camera specs, the wireless charging capability, the conditions it could fly in, the speeds it could reach. Now it was approaching the Manhattan skyline, where the same man was waiting on the rooftop of a skyscraper, another plinth in front of him, controls in hand. The drone alighted on the plinth and the propellers stilled. And then the image faded out and was replaced by a head-and-shoulders interview with the man with the control pad, who was identified on the screen as Autonomo co-founder Robert Lemoine.
"It would not be an exaggeration," he began, "to say that this technology has the power to impact every sector of every economy of every country on the planet. The applications in agriculture, in law enforcement, in wildlife protection, in traffic management, in supply chain security, in border security, in peacekeeping and humanitarian aid, even just in personal peace of mind."
He kept going, but Rosie was sitting open-mouthed. This was the man who'd called her on the phone. She was certain of it. The timbre of his voice, his accent, his intonation, the style of his address. She had no doubt whatsoever. She sat back in her chair, utterly bewildered. Why would Robert Lemoine, one of the world's richest men, ring her in search of Tony and pretend that he was someone else? Shaking her head, she clicked back to the article about Sir Owen's death and reread it more carefully. And then, frowning even deeper, she went back to her phone to revisit the last messages that she'd exchanged with Tony. "Are you winning?" she had texted him on Monday last.
"Well, I just had my first no comment," he'd texted back. "So I guess that means I'm onto something."
"Definitely," she'd replied. She scrolled down.
"I might be out of range for a few days, just FYI," he'd written next. "Following a hunch."
And then he'd signed off, XXX. Rosie stared at the conversation, biting her lip, shaking her head. She tried calling him, but as she'd expected, his phone went straight to voicemail.
"Hi, you've reached Tony. You know what to do." "Cheers,"
said Tony's voice in her ear. She hung up, thought for a moment, and then texted one of her indoor netball mates who sometimes volunteered with Burnham Wood. "Hey girl," she wrote. "Do you have a contact number for Mira Bunting by any chance?" A reply came barely 20 seconds later. Rosie pasted Mira's number into her contacts, and before she'd had time to second-guess herself, she typed a message out. "Hi, Mira," she wrote. "This is Rosie Damani from school. Long time no see. I'm trying to get in touch with Tony, Gallo, but his phone is off, and I wondered if you might be able to help me out. I know that he was down in Thorndike with you all. Sorry to ask like this, but it's urgent. Thanks, take care. Rosie, X." She sent the message. Unlike Tony, Mira had her read receipts turned on, and Rosie watched as the message tag updated from delivered to read, marking the date and the time, 24/8/17, 21:49. A second later, a grey bubble appeared, the three animated dots showing that Mira was composing a reply. Then Rosie saw something strange. The grey bubble froze, and then a second later it disappeared, and the tag changed from read back to delivered. Rosie blinked. She was sure she had never seen that happen before. There must be a bug in the system, she thought, and exited the app. But when she opened it again, the tag still said delivered. She checked again several minutes later, and then again before she went to bed, and then again the next morning when she woke up. But the read receipt never altered, and Mira never replied.